to be able to have a military mission or a military ministry in their own backyard. You think about some of the statistics. I mean, 22 veterans a day are dying by suicide in our country. The reality is only 0.43% of us served in the military. So if ever a mission field for the church in our local country, in our own land, it would be this population. Not to mention that some of you have veterans in your churches. Sometimes your best leaders are sitting on the back pew and they're retired military personnel. You're missing out on their leadership in your church.
Welcome to the Lead Like Jesus podcast. This is Karen Conley. I'm in studio with my husband, Chris Conley, who is a trustee for Lead Like Jesus. And we have part two of an interview with Evan Owens. Evan is the executive director of Reboot Combat Recovery. Evan, thank you so much for sticking around and allowing us to pick your brain some more on part two. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Give us a little bit of a recap, a little bit of your journey professionally to bring us up to speed, and then we'll get going with some additional questions that we really wanted to ask you.
My background kind of professionally started off in the music industry, and when that didn't work out, I moved into technology and found myself a few years later as the CEO of a growing tech firm called CenterSource. It's right here in Nashville. And as we began to grow, with that came some accolades and awards, whether that be, you know, Inc. 5000, fastest growing companies in Tennessee, this sort of thing. And anyone who's ever worked in the tech space knows that it's a challenging business because you're dealing with a young talent who's in high demand, thing that's often in an industry that's often very competitive. But we managed to put together a really great team and grow that. And I was with them for just under 10 years and grew that. And the companies continue to thrive and do well after my leadership has moved on to others. God called us away, my wife and I, to build Reboot. And we had one location at Fort Campbell, and I think today we've got just under 20. I think we might be 19 or 20 locations around the country. God willing, we're going to keep growing.
That's a big story in a short amount of time. You grew this company, and you were the CEO of this company, and transitioned after about 10 years and started Reboot. There's a whole lot more behind the scenes in that comment. Give us a little bit more detail on, in that transition period, how did you know that you were coming to the end of this tenure for CenterSource, and then how was this vision birthed in you for Reboot?
Well, it's actually interesting. My wife and I, before we left to do Reboot full-time, we would pray constantly, God, you know, the money is yours, my job is yours, the home is yours, anything that you want, take it. We used to pray that as a family. And it's interesting because you pray that, but then when it starts to happen, you're like, whoa, psych, didn't mean it. Nope, don't take it. I like this thing a lot. I'll tell you, it was interesting. I'd love to tell you that I was noble and that I saw this great need and I just said, God, I have to leave this beautiful thing. But really what happened was God started to frustrate me. And started to frustrate my leadership at CenterSource. Things started to not happen easily. Everything took 10 times as much effort. Some A-list players started to get recruited away. We started having sales struggles. And things are not going well. And I'm not the type of person that just jumps ships and bails. And so really God began to frustrate that. And at first I thought, you know, I almost had an identity crisis. Like I thought I was the smart business person. Why can't I fix it? But then I think really God opened my eyes and said, no, I'm frustrating this because I'm trying to get you to move. You need to listen. I'm trying to get you to move if you just have faith and move. And that's really how the prayer thing started to happen.
Evan, I think it's so appropriate at this point in time for our listeners to consider. We want to talk all about specifically this ministry and nonprofit that you and your wife have created. What you just described as leaders are listening, especially if you are a leader who wants to lead like Jesus. I think the words that I usually hear Chris, the way that he usually frames that is a holy discontent. If you are in a place where there is just an unrest in you, to always be sensitive to the Lord. And you're right. Most of the time it costs us something. And most of the time God just has to push us out of the boat before we're willing to go. But I love the fact together we're able to just put your yes on the table and say, okay, we will take that step. Now that you look back, and how long has your seventh anniversary coming up?
Six.
Yeah. So yeah. 6 years later, you look back. What regrets do you have, Evan?
Man, that's a tough one. I would say the biggest regret that I have is I would have recognized it sooner, been more in line with what Jesus wanted. I think that we spent time. But I also think Dave Ramsey, in one of his books, Entree Leadership, talks about something like, I'm going to butcher it, he'd get mad at me, but you know, you're standing on the dock, the boat is where you want to be. And he said the smart person works like crazy to pull the boat closer so they can step from the dock to the boat as opposed to trying to jump, because he says if you miss the boat, you know, now you don't have the dock and you don't have the boat, and this is called drowning. And I think for me that the boat was at the dock a little long. I think the boat was at the dock a little long, and I had such a fear complex because of some family of origin things for me. I was afraid, and I think that fear flowed my faith. I would have stepped sooner, I think. That's the biggest regret that I have. I think we wasted some time.
Elaborate on that statement. That's another great statement. Fear slowed my faith. Break that down for us.
Still to this day, one of my struggles is a fear of calamity, a fear of sudden collapse. I think there's lots of things about my upbringing that shape that in me, but I have this fear that once one thing goes wrong, everything's going to go wrong. And when you think about even my last few years as the CEO at CenterSource, one of the things that I think I did poorly was a lot of times I would, my wife calls it catastrophizing, I think is how she says it. Your snowball of what bad could happen starts to take off and go. Well, when you do that, especially when God's calling you into ministry, there's unlimited number of things that can go wrong. That's a losing struggle. I'm jealous of the eternal optimist entrepreneurs that basically just see nothing but silver lining. I am not that person. I have a mindset that I have to constantly war against, which is one of fear that somehow God is not going to provide. Somehow things aren't going to work out. So what started to happen is God was saying, step onto the boat, step off of this dock that I've built. You have a beautiful, shiny, brand new wood dock that everybody walks by and says, man, that's the life. Look at Evan on that dock. I'm telling you to step off the dock onto this kind of little shanty boat. And I didn't have the faith. The fear was louder in my head. You know, you think of a little whisper or ringing in the ears. I think for me, that fear started off as a ringing in my ears. And then it's kind of at night when you start hearing that ringing, it gets louder and louder until pretty soon all you can hear is the ringing. And that's what fear became for me. It became the only noise I could hear at some point.
Every leader that is listening can relate to what you're saying and really appreciates that honesty and that transparency, because I think it's really easy when we talk to leaders from all across this country and you read the resume and you hear all the accolades that you assume that everybody is just absolutely 100% confident and secure in who they are and they're bold and they take that step and you're the one that's maybe trembling on the inside and you're the only one. And the reality is, I think any one of us who've ever been in that place of trying to discern whether or not God is calling us to leave what is comfortable and what is successful and what the world measures to do something that's going to have an eternal impact. I think every single one of us has that moment of fear. So if you're out there and you're on that dock and haven't made it to the boat yet, I hope that this podcast and Evan, your story will be an encouragement that you did that 6 years ago and the difference that you are already making in so many hundreds and now thousands of military members and their families. I hope there's not a single ounce of regret in your mind that you stepped out.
You know, it's funny. We started Reboot 6 years ago, but it's only been about 2 years that I quit my job. I did both jobs, if you can believe this. We ran two things. We ran CenterSource and we ran Reboot in the evenings. We didn't have kids yet at this point. Once we had a kid, it basically pushed us over the edge. We were in permanent compassion burnout. But I think for me, that was one of the things I'm talking about is I would work 60, 70, 80-hour, 90-hour weeks sometimes, really because of fear, not because of faith, not because I wanted to help the veterans so much, but it was that I wanted to help the veterans and their families, but I also didn't want to leave the dock. I didn't want to leave the big catch of fish that I had just made and follow him. So I tried to do both. I tried to keep the safety blanket of dock and be on the boat, and it's humanly impossible. Can't do it.
Another principle that, as I'm listening to you, that I think about in this world of fear and faith is that faith is frequently defined as confident trust in God. And then fear, it results because we're not confident in us. See, we're trying to take over control, and we know that we can't be at that level of control, so therefore it creates fear. So when our confident trust isn't in God, then the default is it's supposed to be in us, but then when we feel like it's supposed to be in us, we're afraid because we know we can't handle it.
That's good. I'm getting some good counsel. Yeah, that's right.
So, you know, in that way, we've always got to replace that fear with faith and replace that confident trust. Instead of trying to be confident in us, we've got to put that trust in God. And then that is what enables us to step out of the boat. And also, I agree with you. Sometimes we got to be pushed out of the boat.
Evan, our first podcast, you had an opportunity to touch on some of the topics that is kind of the core of your 12-week curriculum. Give us kind of the 50,000-foot view first. What does Reimboot entail with this 12-week course? What other components have you developed with that ministry? And then in a minute, would love to dive down a little bit more specifically into those specific topics you carry.
Maybe some of the leaders listening have used programs like Financial Peace University. Think of Reboot sort of as a Financial Peace University, but not finance. Think of it more in terms of trauma. It's interesting for us. What we've done is we really build communities of healing wherever healing is needed for military families. And so we operate out of churches, out of community centers, out of nonprofits, out of military-based buildings, all sorts of places. And what we do is we actually identify local leaders who have a heart for this type of mission, you know, combining faith and trauma. We equip them, we train them, we create a system where they can raise up local leaders, and we give them curriculum, outreach materials, a full system basically to be able to have a military mission or a military ministry in their own backyard. You think about some of the statistics. I mean, 22 veterans a day are dying by suicide in our country. The reality is only 0.43% of us served in the military. So if ever a mission field for the church in our local country, in our own land, it would be this population. Not to mention that some of you have veterans in your churches. Sometimes your best leaders are sitting on the back pew and they're retired military personnel. You're missing out on their leadership in your church. So what we do is we equip churches to offer a 12-week course.
Evan, as you referenced that, I have grown up on military bases and spent time there. I currently live in a city that does not have a high military population. It's a very different experience for someone in the military, whether they have that community around them or not. I'm just wondering, from your experience, is it the type of thing that someone listening, they may not have a ton of veterans around, but that your program would be even on a one-on-one basis or just a small number of people that there's a neighbor down the street that you know is struggling? Is it something that individual that has a heart for that could contact you, and though there might not be a formal program in their city yet, that could be maybe that starting point?
Absolutely. And for the, I don't know the demographic of this podcast listenership, but a lot of times if you live near an inner city area, you'd be shocked at the percentage of inner city youth that join the military today. So a lot of times we might grow up in suburbs or in nicer upper middle class white areas where statistically this is the lowest population that's ever served in the military of that demographic in history. But yet you look at your rural and your urban areas, that's the bulk of the people who join the military as enlisted service members specifically. And so a lot of times it's just a matter of kind of finding those pockets of people. And typically veterans kind of do life with other veterans. So many times that's the story, right? We get a veteran that's a Christian that calls us. He says, hey, I know four or five guys that we hang out together. We go play X, Y, Z, whatever on the weekend. Could I do this in my little town? And pretty soon, you know, in about a year or two, he's leading a group of 30 or 50 veterans and their families through a group. And he calls and he's just like, I can't believe God's doing this in this little town, whether it be Calvert City, Kentucky, or Lynchburg, Virginia, or Rio Rancho, New Mexico. I mean, it's like these crazy cities where God's popping things up and veterans are just emerging from the darkness they've been hiding in, and their spouses are coming out of the woodwork and saying, yeah, my family needs help.
You're referencing families. Tell us a little bit about the family component, because I know that you reach not just the veteran, him or herself, but also the families.
We learned early on the greatest accountability partner for the combat veteran was their spouse. They speak the truth, good and bad, in love sometimes, but they speak the truth nonetheless. One of the things that we really started to recognize is trauma, especially combat trauma, has a way of destroying your trust in humanity. You generically believe, as an American, that people are generically good. For the most part, they won't harm you. But you go downrange and suddenly you see abusive women and children maybe like you've never seen before in this country. And all of a sudden, your view of humanity is skewed. And you come back, now you're supposed to treat your kids the same, you're supposed to love your wife the same, and it's really hard because they still have this quote-unquote naive view of the world. They haven't seen the horror that you've seen with your own two eyes. And so what we start recognizing, if I believe that when two are married, they become one flesh, and I believe that, well then, when one person goes through trauma, guess what? So does the other. And then when those two go through trauma, because they're the authority in their house, what's crazy is so often they're passing down those same family of origin problems and now added this trauma to it, they're passing down to the next generation of their kids. And so if we could stop it at the root before it has a chance to go to the next generation, and if we could bring the spouse in, man, we could raise up some leaders, some family leaders. That's what's happening.
We do a Celebrate Recovery ministry at our church and have some other forms of recovery ministry. But the first step often is that step of having to come out of denial. What would you say are the most common ways that people kind of have that denial of, oh, everybody has this problem and they make excuses? How do you help people really see that they have this need and they're willing to come out of denial and enter into kind of to remove the stigma of recovery so that everybody sees that they're in need of recovery?
It's hard, right? With only 0.43% of people serving, the most common reason in combat trauma, people don't seek help. And I think in trauma in general, it's a little different than substance abuse, but the reason is they feel like there's no one else like them. Nobody else has been through what I've been through. Nobody else has seen what I've seen. And so how could they possibly relate to how I see the world now? Because of that, there's this feeling of absolute loneliness. And this leads to isolation. Proverbs says it is a dead man's cave.
Wow.
And so how do we do that? It starts with community. It starts by, we typically, when we start a new location, in about 6 months to 9 months time, the leader of that location will have been someone who graduated our course. So what we want is all of our leaders, which right now we only have one group out of the 20 that's still in transition. Every other group is led by a combat veteran who's a graduate, who's able to stand up and look you in the eye, and their spouse, who's the co-leader, is able to look you in the eye as a spouse and say, I've lived through what you've lived through. I learned from it. And now together we can lead you out of it. That empathy and that authority, I believe God's given them that mantle, is a powerful story, and it's a powerful picture. And so that's how we overcome that, is we get them to a community, and then all of a sudden, about week three or four, they look around the room and they're like, holy cow, I'm not alone. All these people are experiencing the same things. Their marriages are becoming just as broken as mine's becoming, and they're experiencing the same nightmares and the same substance struggles. And it's like, wow, you know, and there's this moment of like, I'm not alone anymore. And that's the first time the light peeps through, I think. And from there, you just build.
Evan, one of the things that comes into my mind that I'm about to say that I wish wasn't true, but I think it's true. With all of the terror attacks, there are going to be more and more people in trauma. And I think of the Orlando mass shooting. This sounds like this recovery program would be incredible for that type of situation, for people who've experienced that kind of trauma, to be able to tap into this type of recovery program, healing program. Have you given thought to that? Have you seen any application in that area yet?
It's actually something that we are looking into. It's both a crisis response, but also sort of a general trauma. So if there's people that are interested in sort of piloting those programs with us, they can reach out to me and help. That would be helpful. But the answer is yes. That's why we are so passionate about empowering local leaders, especially church people, to be able to respond to trauma and to sort of emotional and mental crises, because not all of us have to be heart surgeons of trauma, but all of us can know basic CPR, know what to do. And I fear that a lot of times when things like Orlando happen, kind of end up falling back to what I call like Hallmark support. Here's a pithy saying that I hope makes you feel better, like all things work together for good, which is not really helpful in that moment.
Right.
And so while true, not helpful. So that, you know, we try to equip local people with almost CPR of trauma, if you will.
When I listen to the program that you have and think about if my son or daughter or a good friend of mine is in need of recovery, then you are giving us an example of faith, hope, and love. If we can turn to this ministry, if we can turn to ministries like yours, it just gives us that ability to believe again, that ability to just keep going. Would you mind sharing a story, one of your most proud moments, of how you have seen God use these principles to take somebody from a place of hurting to a place of healing?
Think of a guy, when I first met him, he told me a story. I'll keep it short, but special operator, special forces guy, downrange in Iraq. Comes in from a unit, bunch of his guys go to sleep in these kind of man-made, like a barracks made out of hay and mud, essentially, right? So it's like fake walls with chicken wire, if that makes sense. And there's this motorcyclist driving back and forth. Motorcyclist runs right into the side of this mud hut. He's got an explosive device on him. It explodes, and all of a sudden, all of this guy's friends are now buried in the mud. And so he goes and he tells the other guys to grab these shovels, but if you know military, all they really have are these tiny little shovels that they actually use to kind of dig like holes to go to the bathroom in. I know that sounds terrible, but that's sort of what they're doing. And they're digging as fast as they can with this shovel. And he looked me in the eye one time, and he was tearing up, and he said, you know, Evan, I can do almost anything. I can beat somebody with my hands. I'm great with weapons. I'm fast. He said, but they never, in basic training, they never taught me how to dig faster. And that's the skill I needed to keep my friends alive that day, and I couldn't do it. And he was overcome by guilt and grief, and he was processing that poorly. He was drinking all the time. He thought his career was over because he just couldn't move on. Well, it's crazy. As he began to heal through this course, the craziest thing happened, which is he started to realize that he never was good at coping with loss. He was never good at coping with guilt, that he always assumed the worst in himself. And as we started to really say, God has a plan for you. God gifted you with leadership. Use it for his glory. Not only did Cliff, you know, ultimately accept the Lord, but he grew now, and now he's leading one of our largest groups around the nation. And he has, like, right now he's got like 40 people in his group, and he's the group leader. And to see him speaking life into these people now, you know, he emails me all the time saying, you know, Evan, thank God for you and your wife. Like, this is what I was meant to do, lead men and women through healing. And I never would have guessed that about myself. And that, for me, that's it. You know, multiplying leaders, multiplying movements. And what's funny is if he just went to church every Sunday and never got help, he would have just still been sitting in the back pew.
That's very true. Very true. I think of 2 Corinthians chapter 1, where it tells us to take the comfort that we have received from God and to comfort others with that same comfort.
Yes.
Evan, this has just been so encouraging. Personally, is so needed, and to know that you are meeting a need out there. And we say in our community, God never wastes a wound. And in your ministry, that is so true for that gentleman, that even what he experienced in so many that are wounded, whether it be emotionally or physically, to know that God has a purpose, and that for them to come back and to be able to reacclimate to their community and know that they are not alone and get the support they need to overcome those things that the enemy is trying to hold them back with is such a needed ministry. Thank you so much for the way that Evan, you and your wife, Jenny, have modeled leading like Jesus. Thank you for joining us for this podcast. If anybody wants to reach out and get more information, what's the best way that they should do that, Evan?
They can go to our website, rebootrecovery.com, and they could sign up to start a group or support an existing group.
Terrific. Well, thank you again, and thank you, listeners, for joining us. If you want information about Reboot Recovery, go to rebootrecovery.com. And for more information about leadership development training and resources, visit us at leadlikejesus.com.